Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Guitar Nerds, so you best get your nerd on. But if you want a little more, well, we've got a Patreon. A place of such majestic wealth for any guitar player, where I can drink a pint of gin and talk about John Mayer. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. That's right. Get your nerd on.
Welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Dan Grace.
Hello there.
And we have plenty
did
to
you,
talk.
Sorry, one sec. What? Did you almost say, I'm your host, Mark Packham?
No, I just ran out of breath.
Sounded like you were about to say, I'm your host, Mark Packham.
Yeah, I appreciate there was a gap there. It was because I'd started with an empty lung full of breath. I should have really thought about this a bit more, but I didn't.
Joe, are you wearing Mark Packham's trainers?
No, don't look down there. Don't look down there. These aren't Mark Packham's trainers or shirt. My haircut isn't combed like his either. What are you talking about? Anyway, this week we've got plenty to talk about. There are still things trickling through post-SNAMM, albeit I think all the super fun and cool things may have already been announced. But we're super chuffed to have the master of Fender Squire himself, Dan Grace, back on the podcast.
Bonjour, hello. Lovely to be here. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, I bet. It's been a pretty...
I thought after last time, you know...
Yeah, I bet.
Well,
I bet it's lovely for you to be here.
Well, again, I thought after last time, the court order, you know, would have prevented me from coming back.
Anyway, it's been a pretty exciting few weeks for you, Dan, because Squire have thrown out some cool new guitars.
Absolutely. The new Summernan launch, the Contemporary Series. So we launched a new Jazzmaster with active pickups, an active bass in 4-string and 5-string, and also a passive bass guitar as well, bass.
That was a bit weird to see a passive bass turned up in what was essentially, this was an expansion of the Contemporary series.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is a little odd, because everything else that's been thrown out of the Contemporary series has been like EMG-style sort of pickups and has been kind of a more metal-orientated type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the whole approach is to make a guitar with very modern features. So you take a look at the first round of guitars that were launched at Winterman, and you'll find, yeah, totally right, an active Stratocaster with a reverse headstock and a Floyd Rose trem on it. But you also find that there's guitars with HSS combinations in passive form as well, as well as a Tele, which is two humbuckers. And this time round, with the addition of the passive basses, we're still looking at a guitar with a 12-inch fingerboard radius and a high-mass bridge in metallic blue and metallic red. So they're still really modern kind of approaches, but a bit more sort of standard for players who aren't really into that all that active stuff.
And they're all, they seem to be, the consistency seems to be they're all matching head caps as well.
Oh, yeah. All the way through.
And interesting colours. This is the thing. It's like a Contemporary series, so that sort of suggests metal. What?
What? It's just the way you said, it's like a contemporary series.
It's well, called the contemporary series.
That's literally what it's called.
But you know, they're being marketed as the contemporary series. And for me, that kind of means like a shreddy guitar. Like it's a 12-inch, you know, it's a 12-inch radius and everything.
I don't know.
They're active EMGs. But then
it's
the
more
colours,
of a take
they're
on...
They're not EMGs.
Oh, well, sorry. Not EMGs. EMG, start, sorry, SQRs.
Mm-hmm. SQR-branded pickups, yeah.
Absolutely.
They're not for purely for people who want to play metal and want to shred, stuff like that. They're for people who want a much more modern feeling guitar.
Yeah.
Something that's kind of a bit more comfortable to play, you know, bigger chords or to play a bit faster on maybe, but definitely not solely for people who are well into metal.
No.
Plus, you find so many more metal players playing white guitars now.
Well, also not just that. I think, you know, where were we? 3 years ago when... Joe, when you and Mark went to that, you went to that festival. That's what was it called? That Brighton festival, like Surfs Up or something. It was called.
Oh, what, the metal festival?
Yeah, and it was all. It was like all Fender guitars. It was all Tellies and
that's
stuff.
That's right. Yeah, there were quite a few ESP Eclipses, but on the whole, we were looking at Jim Root Tellies.
Yeah.
And there were quite a few just like standard like Les Pauls as well, but like. Passive guitars in the metal scene have obviously had a massive like resurgence. Yeah. I think, you know, Ola Englund's kind of partially responsible for that kind of thing. Just because his Washburns and then his new solo guitars have been so popular. And he was like, yeah, hardtail, passive Seymour Duncans.
Well, I just think that that is a good example of Fender sort of having a license to make those guitars. Guitars for people who play, you know, modern or heavy or technical music. People like that don't want the same sort of Telecaster that I want, but they still want a Telecaster.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Do you think it was the Jim Root that changed that? Do you think it's the Jim Root that started this?
I think the Jim Root has been an unbelievable success across the board. You know, for the Fenders, the Squires, all three shapes, they've all just been... I mean, we couldn't get enough... When I was on the shop floor, we just couldn't get enough of them.
Yeah.
And I certainly think that has been I think that was maybe... The first major model in, you know, in terms of a modern guitar, because there's been these sort of guitars before. I mean, think about the Tele Elite from the 80s. That was a similar sort of construction.
Or even,
but this is a lot more tasteful nowadays.
Even from Squire, because Squire did the, what were they called? The Jagmasters. Do you remember them? I used to have one of those in Silver Sparkle.
No, you're thinking of the Supersonic.
No, I'm not. I'm thinking of a Jaguar hardtail with two humbuckers, passive humbuckers.
In
Silver Sparkle,
in Jazzmaster scale length. I think if it was the Jazzmaster.
It was Jazzmaster scale length.
I didn't realise that came in Silver Sparkle. Obviously, if you have one, then they did.
I think it was maybe part of the Vista series.
Mm. Oh, okay. So, yeah, it's a bit of an older one. Because the Jagmaster made a resurgence as part of the Vintage Modified line, I want to say, maybe 5 years ago, which was an orange. I think it only came in orange. I think it was orange.
Orange Sparkle.
No, I don't think it was Sparkle. This is the one from like 5 years ago or so. I think it came in orange with two humbuckers. But
It's
something about the Jim Root that I really loved. Of course, the guitar is awesome. The guitar's wicked, but the case it comes in is so cool.
The Fender, the specifically Fender, because there is a Squire Jim Root.
The Fender model
used
to come with, I'm sure it's worth, pretty sure it still does actually, comes with a tweed case, but it's black and white tweed.
Oh, that's swag.
Absolutely fantastic looking thing.
Yeah, I'm into that. This is, though, the contemporary series as a whole is quite an unusual route for Squire. I think if you think about the direction Squire's been taking over the last few years, like Vintage Modified has been an absolute cornerstone.
Classic vibe.
Classic
as well.
Vibe, yeah. But that was the things. Those were the things that were selling. It was like, and I loved it because it meant I could get a vintage correct-ish sort of Fender style guitar of any form. And I love all the vintage stuff. I could get one of those for £300-400, and that was what was great.
And that's
about
the whole point. I mean, it's with those lines, looking at Vintage Modified and Classic Vibe, it's a guitar that's accessible money wise that you're aspiring to. So you're looking at a really, you know, real cool looking like 60s style Mustang, but you know, you want to buy one. Well, actually, Mustang's a bad example because you could probably pick up one from the 70s. It's not too much money.
Well, but, you say that.
We saw a band the other week playing one that was a little bit rough and ready. Though if you're looking for an old telly or even like a classic player telly or whatever, the price is kind of prohibitive to some people. Of course, you work your way up the ladder. But of course, you can buy yourself a thin line telly from Vintage Modified for a fraction of the price. And it's a kind of a gateway to having those real cool looking classic instruments.
Yeah.
But when it comes to contemporary and the more modern kind of part of Squire, it's like you say with the Jagmaster, it's something that's been done for a while, those more modern kind of looking guitars. And in the Deluxe series as well, where there's active basses, stuff like that, a Jazzmaster with an anodized plate, which is a bit more classic looking.
So wait, what's that, the J-Maskis one?
No. There's the J-Maskis, which is vintage white with the anodized plate.
Yeah.
But there's a Deluxe Jazzmaster as well.
Oh, yeah, of course, there's
the red one.
It came out quite recently, didn't it? And it's sort of almost past the silver.
It's last year.
This is because you spoke about this on the podcast.
I did,
some time ago.
Well, and it simply came from the fact that it sort of disappeared, even just from, like, Fender's point of view, because it's just a one-off guitar, and it's not something you think about very often. And Dan, you just spotted it. Like, we're like, oh, why haven't we done anything with this? This is like a guitar that people need to know about.
Tell everyone about it.
So we just Dan made a bit of a song and dance of it, and then all of a sudden loads started appearing, which is great.
Yeah, it's kind of the weird thing about Squire at the moment is that I feel like the the attention is kind of moved on to these contemporary things, whereas the Vintage Modified and Classic Vibe seem to be taking a step back. Like, the contemporary is where all the focus is, but also, like, the Bullet Telecaster, like the Surf Green Bullet Tele, which was probably probably the best looking thing you could spend £150 on.
Yeah.
Apart from, like, a night out in Margate.
But yeah, you're completely right. I think, there's some great stuff coming out from Squire at the moment. It's a very, like, even for us, it's like, it's a really exciting time. Like, I mean, you know, stuff that we can't talk about, but even this morning, Dan got an email being like, oh, this is some stuff that's coming out next year. And we were both just like, yes.
Oh,
is
this the double neck Squire telly that you were telling me about?
I wasn't supposed to tell anyone about that. The double neck
Mustang telly hybrid.
One goes the other.
Yeah, one's a tenor.
The nine neck Squire of all the pre CBS movies.
I forgot. But no, like, there's just cool stuff coming out all the time, and it's like Squire is such a dynamic and exciting brand. It's really cool. It's very fun.
What a time to be alive, is all we'll say.
And speaking of what a time to be alive, Mark Packham has finally...
Who?
Mark Packham, previous podcast host Mark Packham, has finally announced his actual job role. That's right. He put it on the Facebook group. Listeners, if you're not on the Facebook group, facebook.com/guitar nerds forum, where Mark Packham, I nearly said group, but forum. Don't go to group. That's a different one. Nothing going on there. But yeah, Mark Packham's finally announced that he's going to Reverb.
Yes,
yeah,
so
which we've known about.
We've known about for ages. But yeah, he's finally.
You mean you've been hiding it from everyone?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, he is going to be in charge of UK content and UK marketting. So
yeah.
By the sounds of things, Reverb are really making a bit of a push for it at the moment.
Absolutely.
They appear to have a marketing person and a content person in most European countries, because they've done really well in the US, but they just hasn't seemed
well,
to
that's
be
it. Yeah,
a huge amount round over here.
Well, for our American and European listeners, Reverb is probably a much more familiar concept than for our UK listeners, because whilst Reverb
and with
has...
Mark Packham at the helm, that is probably how it will remain.
Yeah, I think so. But I think Reverb's done a fantastic job kind of elsewhere. It's just strange that it hasn't made any impact over here. But maybe just because it hasn't had a wonderful internet celebrity like Mark Packham.
There you go. It's game changer.
Well, you think about it. Reverb in America has got Andy from Thingy.
Pro Guitar Shop?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. He's there. You know, in Europe, you've got that Frank dude from Toman. And over here, now...
Mark Packham. Main man.
Yeah.
It's great, Reefer. I love flicking through it. And just, you know, you can kind of set on there where you want stuff to be shipped from, or where, you know, if you're in the UK, obviously you might turn off, say, America, or, you know, outside of Europe if you have to get stuff shipped in, if you were serious about buying something, that is. But when I flick through it, I just turn it on for everywhere.
Yeah, because you get to see all the best
so
stuff.
Much cool stuff. Oh. It's such a fantastic geek sesh, having a little...
The vintage
browse.
Gear on that website is fantastic, and there's always something cool. There's always something that's either a really interesting Russian travel instrument or double necked Japanese dual tenor hybrid.
It is dangerous, though, because I end up lusting over stuff that I couldn't possibly get in the UK.
Yeah, yeah, that is.
You just go on an expensive holiday.
That is the problem.
With an empty guitar case.
So outside of Fender news, for me this week, do you know what turned up at GAC? Go on, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, Joe, what turned up this week?
Thank you. The new Music Man, James Valentine's.
I saw you were holding them up in the new colours.
They're so good. So Tusker Red and Toluca Lake. Toluca or Tallulah? Toluca?
Toluca.
I don't know.
Toluca Lake Blue, which is essentially Candy Apple Red and Pelham Blue.
Pelham Blue, is it not Lake Placid?
Well, Lake Placid, whatever, it's the same colour.
it is not the same colour.
Pretty much the same colour.
Are you colourblind?
They're the same colour. They're not the same colour. They are clearly. You can hold both of them up side by side and they'd be very similar.
Okay.
Toluca Lake Blue.
Yeah, looks great, doesn't it? Came in their hardtail and trem format, but they look absolutely fantastic. I completely love playing them. Dan Grace, you look like you're losing your mind over there.
The sparkle looks absolutely amazing.
There's some absolutely quality finishes. Wonderful pickup configuration there. Humbucker, Music Man humbucker in the neck, and then that stacked single coil in the bridge, basically a tele pickup in the bridge. All there, you know, with a push-push active boost on the volume control and a passive tone push-push control there as well. A completely fantastic guitar. And you can get it in a Bates Maple flamed or bird's eye neck.
What's everyone going to think of figured roasted maple in 20 years, do you think? Do you think that's something that will endure?
Do you know what?
The fashion.
That was actually the segue that I was going to give this because...
Oh, sorry, mate, I spoiled
you. No, you're absolutely right. Isn't it weird how everything's roasted and baked at the moment? You think
so many guitars with roasted and
They do feel great.
Yeah. I mean, most popular guitar from SNAMM, hands down, was the Charvel DK24. Now comes with a flamed, roasted... Is it flamed?
I think it's roasted maple.
I don't know if it's particularly flamed. I just think...
I don't think it's flamed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just think the one that's... You know, the ones that have been doing the rounds have ended up with those necks. I don't think it's a particular feature. I think if you just get one of those in you... I could be wrong. I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
Yeah. But, you know, they're obviously the Ibanez AZs have featured sort of flamed maple. But Music Man really started this, I kind of feel. I feel like they were the first to sort of jump on the bandwagon.
I think they were the first of the sort of major companies to do it. But, you know, there have been boutique brands who've been doing it for a while. But I think that they were one of the first. And also, just think about back to what I think is really funny is that it was only, where are we, 4 or 5 years ago when Gibson were doing baked maple fingerboards and everyone was like, this is out. Outrageous.
Oh, well, of course, whenever Gibson do anything, everyone's got an issue with it.
Well,
but,
of course,
you know, when Fender
or
Music Man, it's absolutely fine, isn't it? Yeah.
I've got an SG everyone with a baked maple fretboard.
Do you?
Yeah. My SG standard.
Is it not rich?
No, it's not. My SG standard is...
Your white one?
Yeah, my standard is a baked maple fretboard.
That is surprising. What year is it?
2013, is it? Or is it? No, it'd be before. It's like 2008, 2009.
Baked Maple, no. It would have been 2012, I think.
When I go home, get it out of the case and have a look at the serial number.
Have a look at the first and fifth number.
Yeah, weird.
Think 2000.
There's some stuff. It's a bit like riding a bike, reading Gibson serial numbers. You never, ever could possibly forget how to read a Gibson serial number from the late 80s onwards.
Why is that?
Because they're always the first and the fifth number.
I don't understand.
So the first number is, say it's 1990 something.
Oh,
the first number will
saying.
Be nine. Right. And then the fifth number will be the other year in the decade.
Yeah. If you've made that sound quite complicated.
I know I have, yeah. I know I have.
If it's 1998, the first number will be nine and the fifth number will be eight. So, and then the other numbers are all just... jumbled up.
98.
Ah, I understand. I don't at all. Do you know the other cool thing that came in with the new St. Vincent's? Do you remember those charcoal? Oh, no, you didn't come on that thing to it, when we went to the Music Man Factory?
No, it was the day before I landed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the new Charcoal Sparkle, great name for a colour. The Charcoal Sparkle St. Vincent came in as well.
Okay,
which
is it American made or is it a, yeah, no, a Sterling?
It's a full Music Man Charcoal uh-huh. Sparkle, like matte black hardware, like a matte black scratch plate and pickups, double humbucker version.
Okay,
with a trem, and it is a roasted maple neck and headstock with an ebony board. And
lovely.
I can't the pictures, listeners, that you'll be able to find online of these, unfortunately, are all kind of like front or back, so you don't get to see how incredible it looks, sort of top down. Just that where the ebony, the big thick slab of ebony board meets the roasted maple of the neck, it looks absolutely fantastic. I think of everything I've ever seen, this looks like the absolute height of workmanship. I've been so massively impressed with this instrument. Sounds fantastic as well. Those humbuckers sound great. And they coil split really nicely. Like the coil split positions sound really super stratty, like those off, you know, the sort of second and fourth strat positions. They sound fantastic. But what an absolutely super guitar.
It's a great looking sparkle as well. I'm a bit obsessed with sparkle finishes at the moment. I really, really want to get a seafoam sparkle guitar, like a Tele or a Jazzmaster maybe.
I sent you a picture because I popped into GAC last week and there's a seafoam sparkle strat in there at the moment. It looks lovely.
Wicked. 63, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I mean, custom shop, not
yeah.
You know, not
OG. Custom shop. Yeah. But yeah, see, it's lovely. It's a lovely colour. Would you not go for... I think if I was going to go sparkle, I'd have to go large flake.
Yeah. Yeah. At the moment, I'm at the early stages of deciding because, of course, I can never make a decision. And if I jump into it, I'll end up buying another one instead of making the right decision the first time. So I reckon, large... I mean, they look wicked, don't they? They do look fantastic. Coming back to St. Vincent quickly... I still think that sea breeze, that sort of greeny blue colour they do, is the best.
Oh yeah, the new, they do that in their double humbucker version. It's kind of their sort of faded sonic blue style colour. They do that as their double humbucker or as the three mini buckers. But I think it's an interesting move for Music Man anyway, just to make it a double humbucker guitar. I actually think the three mini humbuckers sound absolutely fantastic. But if you're going to If you want to get people buying the guitar and trying it out, you need to give it a pickup configuration that people are used to.
It's got to be more standard.
Yeah,
it really
absolutely
does. And, you know, you've got no pole pieces on them and they're covered. So they already look, you know, slightly different.
Yeah.
But you could tell someone, no, this is like a pretty standard configuration and anyone can plug it in and use it.
Exactly.
It's the thing with a guitar. It's for making music. You want it to be as simple as possible. You want it to have, I personally want it to have one pickup and one tone, one volume control, no tone control.
Do you play a two-pickup guitar?
I'm thinking about taking the pickup off it.
Please do.
Actually, yeah. Because I've never used it, ever. I've had the guitar I've had the guitar 4 years, my custom shop, Nocaster, and I have never, ever, ever used the neck pickup.
But I don't understand why anyone would on a Tele. I've never used a lipstick on a Tele. It's all about that bridge pickup.
It's not a lipstick.
Well, sorry,
just a neck pickup.
Just covered.
I tell you what, as I have, and I realise that this might sound silly because I'm still, a young gun, but as I've gotten older, I've gotten more into the neck pickup.
Really?
Yeah, I know, it's weird. Maybe it's just like when I'm playing around at home, but like the neck pickup sounds nice. Maybe that's the issue, is that I normally don't want to sound nice, but when I'm playing at home, if I'm just like plugged in, I want to sound nice. And the neck pickup sounds nice.
You've lost your edge, man.
I think maybe. As soon as you're in a band format, that neck pickup will sound muddy instead of nice.
Yeah, I think you're right.
As soon as there is a bass and a drum kit along with you.
That's it. The whole thing I love about a Tele and a bridge pickup is that you can hear yourself over everyone else.
Yeah, totally.
It's like the guitar, the lead guitar is the focal point. Apart from the vocals in a band, you're supposed to kind of show off a bit. And you get that Tele spank. And everyone knows about it, especially if you've got like a 6L6 amp or something like that that's really cranked. You can not deny the sound of that guitar, you know?
Absolutely.
And if you want to sweeten it up, you can just roll a bit of the tone off. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm in the market for a pick guard without a hole in it.
Just do it. Just get it done. Get it
well,
done.
Well, it can be reversed, can't it? So
exactly. Do you know what's happened to me? I've got really, you know, I've got like three strats now, which is...
How many strats does it take to change a light bulb, Joe?
Yeah, it's too many.
So you've got the American Original 60s. Yeah. You've got the classic, classic
50s.
Daphne Blue.
Yeah, that's right.
What's your third strat?
Well, I've got sort of, it's not mine, but I have it sort of it, like indefinitely. My mate Tom's Roadworn.
Okay.
Sunburst Roadworn 50s strat. Which also sounds fantastic. But do you know what I've started doing? Because I'm always on the funky pickup options.
The out-of-phase options.
The out-of-phase options. I've always been on those. And recently...
The Classic doesn't have that, does it? It's only three-way.
No, it's a five-way.
Is it?
Yeah, on the Classic.
That's weird.
I thought it was a weird one as well. I think the Classic Player is a three-way.
No, I don't think it is. Maybe... No, I guess... Well, I can't remember. I think maybe the American Vintage came with a three-way switch, but
possibly.
Were loaded with a five. Because
I think that
who wants a five?
Who wants a three?
Who wants a three?
Well, this is the same, isn't it? The American Vintage Tellys, they came with the original pickup, so with that dark, with the toneless neck pickup.
You could switch it to that. I believe they
came wired like that, and you could switch it to conventional.
Maybe I can't remember. Yeah. I can't remember now. Mm. That's not the case anymore, for sure.
No, sure. But yeah, do you know what I've recently discovered? Just using the bridge pickup.
Yes, good.
On a Strat. But I was like, oh, this sounds great. I've always thought they sounded a bit thin, but now I'm like, oh, this is fantastic.
Hang on, you like a Strat, but you've never done that before.
I thought it was unusable. I thought it was just like really, really trebly. But now I'm like, oh, this is actually great.
I used to have a great Japanese Strat that I had wired in series. So you could have the bridge.
Neck and bridge.
And the neck as a humbucker. And it just sounded so great. Yeah. I was really into Biffy Clyro at the time. And
that's what
he used to do.
Or
yeah.
is it just humbucker they use?
I thought he was all about the bridge pickup.
And series. Oh. All about the series.
Oh, cool. Sweet.
Very cool.
So I think the way he has his is bridge and middle in series.
Right, okay.
That's cool.
So humbucker.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah. The same thing, but you can choose if... You get a totally different tone if you're the neck versus the middle on the bridge.
Anyway, we have natted on for long enough, so I feel like it is about time for some news.
You're listening to the Guitar Nerds podcast. This is the news.
You've just put the jingle in, haven't you?
I just put the jingle in.
I'm crying out loud.
Shall I do the jingle again now?
You're listening to the Guitar Nerds podcast. This is the news.
No.
I've just done two jingles. See, you can't stop the jingle. That's right. I've actually got jingle options for news as well. I could play this one. News. But we'll stick with the original. We'll stick with the original for now. So anyway, diving headfirst into some news. First up, Dan, let's start with you. There's been a rather interesting and quite unique release from Karma Amps this week.
Yes, the 20T amp kit, which looks real cool, actually.
And that's the thing, is it? An amp kit.
An amp kit, yeah. A flat-packed amplifier kit. So you buy it and you can't really go straight down to the show with it. It's usually, you know, if I've bought a new piece of gear, if I bought a new amp, something as important as actually set up, I probably would do a practice with it before I took it to the show. but with this, you have to put it together yourself. So the whole idea is that it's kind of based on a few players who have gone into the studio and, you know, you get that little boutique amp in the corner of the studio that hardly anyone touches. In this case, inspired by Gibson GA20T, my amp of choice of the little boutique corner is Tone King Imperial.
Okay.
I absolutely love the things. But with this, based on a GA20T from the late 50s, and it's 12, 25 watts, with 6V6 or 6L6s. Apparently, you don't need to bias when you change the tubes either. It's self-biasing. A tube rectifier as well. Tremolo in there. Looks really, really cool.
Yeah, and there are a few options as well, because you can buy it flat pack. You can buy it pre-assembled as well.
Oh, you wouldn't though, would you? You'd want to put it together yourself.
Exactly.
That'd
and I
be
think
great.
It's twice the price as well.
Yeah, it's quite a lot more
it's
money.
It's like sub $1,000, isn't it, for the flat pack version?
Yeah.
I think that's cool, man. People should do more kits, because of course those like cheap sort of tele kits have been available. You know, you've been able to get those for about the last decade. They've been like cheap sort of.
And Martin do it with guitars as well. Yep. You can buy a.
Do they?
You can buy a
D28 kit.
Oh, that sounds dangerous.
An unbranded D28 kit.
Oh, is it unbranded?
Yeah.
I didn't realise it was unbranded.
They wouldn't have Martin written
the
headstock.
No, of course.
Built by my mate Mick in his shed.
Yeah, it's a Mick Martin. I tell you what's, this is kind of a bit of a tangent, but whilst I was over in Nashville, I went into Carter Vintage Guitars, and they actually had two Gibson GA20s from the early 50s just in the shop. They weren't even in the high-end room, and I tell you why they weren't in the high-end room, because they were well cheap. You could buy a 1951 GA20 for $1,000. Do you know what I mean? Like... That amp is 60 years old.
Probably still works as well.
70 years old. And it did still work. It's crazy. But anyway, it's I think that's a testament to that amp that they've survived that period of time. And, you know, now you can get your own one for $1,000.
Interesting thing about this Karma build-yourself amp is that it has the highest quality parts sourced in the USA, but only where possible. So some of the parts are not sourced in the sourced in the USA as well. That's, you know, debatable, isn't it? Though you're right, it's double the price if you want it pre-built.
Yeah.
And I think half the fun of something like that is taking a bit of time when you get home after work to put it together yourself and figure out how this stuff works.
Yeah, but what if you mess it up? It's not like we're talking about an IKEA cabinet, you know, whereas, you can sort of, if you miss... You knock at the corner or you hammer something in wrong, you're like, well, it was a 50 quid wardrobe. We're talking about a £1,000 amplifier.
And a bit of an electric shock.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, you see a lot of Marshall 1974, you know, 18 watt amp kits and stuff like that on the market, which looks so much fun. I guess you have to be a type of person with a little bit of experience and... bit like me, you need to be stupid and a little bit too ambitious.
See, I'm definitely not that person at all. Like, I realise that it's a big saving, but I'm definitely not. Because what would happen is I would buy this, and then as opposed to having an amp that I got for half the price, what I would have is a box with some stuff in it that you could make an amp with that I paid $1,000 for just in the corner of the room. That's what would end up happening. And, you know, you can buy a box for like a quid if you want. You don't have to spend $1,000.
Mate, I've moved house recently. I've got loads left if you want to have one.
Can I have one?
They've got some stuff that I don't want in as well. You can have that.
Yeah, quality. One thing I do think is quite interesting about this is, you know, it is $1,000 cheaper to get it. I've closed the tab now, so I can't go back to it. It is $1,000 cheaper to get it without it being pre-built. And I think that is a really interesting thing to think about, because what they're saying here is you can buy this amp without us doing the work for $1,000 less. So they value their time at $1,000. And that, I think, is something that's worth bearing in mind when you're looking at other...
point to point hand.
Well, not just that, like other stuff that's made in America. You know, a large percentage of the cost of something is the labor, and that's one of the things that's always kind of irked me, is when people say, oh, it's too expensive, this guitar's made in America, it's too expensive. It's like, well, yeah, but it's because someone's being paid quite well to make it. Is the end of the day, you know, it's a skilled profession, and you know you're paying for someone's time. It's not just bits and bobs. I think it's interesting. Oh,
and 100%. This is a great alternative, because being £1,000 cheaper, if someone's sort of irked about the fact it costs too much money because it's made in America, they can say, "Well, here's the bits, put it together yourself."
Well, totally.
And you know, It's, you're right. It's for a certain type of person. Personally, I would love to have a bash at that.
You were saying before we were doing this podcast that you're going to try and build your own cabinet.
I'm going to make...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
My own 4x10 sort of basement style cabinet, yeah. Just out of wood that I'm going to buy in Wicks. I'll report back on it though.
Yeah, that's...
Now, you know, we've been we watched a few videos. And I've made a few plans and read through the internet, a few basic woodworking skills. I'm sure it'll be all right.
What colour are you going to Tolex it?
I'm going to Tolex it black, like a boring person.
Right, okay.
I've a really old Fender basement head that I'd really like it to match.
Ah, I see.
And so that's kind of half of why I want to do it. But the whole thing is, I want 4x10, four 10-inch speakers rather than the 212 that I've currently got. So I need that grit, that real bassy sound when you mic them up is what I'm after.
Super unique. Speaking of cabs, we're actually, our new Guitar Nerds cabs are well on their way. We got Matt put a picture update of them.
When you say our new Guitar Nerds cabs, what you mean is Matt's new cabs?
Yeah, but Matt's cabs that are coming to live at the Guitar Nerds studio.
Oh, are they? I thought they were just for him.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I'm pretty sure he paid for it on the Guitar Nerds credit card as well.
Oh, did he? Yeah. Okay. I've not seen that invoice come through yet.
probably not. But yeah, Matt's having a couple of Zillacab Shell Pink 112, two 112... Shell pink Zilla cabs.
There's a stripe on them as well, isn't there? An offset stripe by the look of it.
Is there really? Oh, so good. They're going to be great. They're going to be the ultimate demo cabinets.
My one criticism is I always thought Matt's rig was supposed to be completely unplayable, but two 1x12 cabs seems quite sort of portable.
I think it's because he actually wants to be able to turn stuff on in his bedroom, which is where it's probably the neatest, best looking and most ridiculous rig setup I've ever seen, and it literally lives next to his bed. It's such a massive waste of incredibly cool equipment that I'm sure he probably turns up no louder than a 10 watt practice amp, which is a shame.
Should get him a little frontman 10.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, moving on, and another cool thing that's come out that was actually pointed out on the podcast Facebook group, Biang Live Master. That's right. Carrying on the theme of like modular effects, because last week we were talking about what was that brand called? Nexi
and Modal.
Yeah. Yeah, Nexi and Modal. Modal, who we saw at, you saw at SummerNAM.
Yeah.
Who released a dual effect switch where you could change the control parameters of it, but essentially it was boosts and drives. It was kind of limited to that sort of.
Yeah, at the moment. Yeah, yeah.
There wasn't a modulation or delay.
Not yet, but I did ask them about that, and they said it was coming. But...
No, that certainly would be cool. And Nexi, who make a waterproof. Sort of modular clip-on effects unit, which I absolutely love. Someone in the group pointed out to me the Biang Live Master, which I think we may have mentioned before. Oh my god, it might be the coolest thing in the world. It's certainly the most affordable way to make a modular effects unit. So there are a few places in the UK listeners where you can buy a Biang Live Master. I'm sure there are plenty in Europe and the States as well. But you can choose their the actual unit that you're going to be, the switcher, essentially, that you're going to be patching into. You can choose between their LM4, LM7, and LM10. I'm sure you can get the impression of how many switches you're going to have available on each of those. And then you can choose the effect units. They do individual modules that you can then load in, and they have everything on there. There's tuners, delays, tremolos, flanges, distortions, crunch, fuzz, compressors, the Big Fuzz delays, delay reverbs. There's one called the Metal End as well, which is a double foot pedal. But that, I mean, that looks absolutely fantastic. Even amp switches and loop pedals can be locked in there. But there's a cool range of awesome stuff. All the pedals at £80 a pop. The board, all the pedals are like £30 a pop. Sorry, around that.
And, 30 quid.
Yeah, and the board is £80. Yeah, they vary a little bit. The most expensive is about £33, and the cheapest is about £23. Oh, sorry, no, the reverb's £59. That's the most expensive.
And the board, when you say it's £80, that's for the biggest one.
Yeah,
the smallest one is about 50 quid.
Exactly. This is cool. This is the coolest little modular board. I absolutely love this. I love everything about this little setup. This is a cool way to have all the cool stuff about digital effects in a physical analog format. What a wicked thing to be able to get and to be able to do for, realistically, less than 250 quid.
This actually is very, very neat. I think this is a very... I mean, we'd have to see how good everything sounds, but I do think it's a cool concept. Tuned out. I was only because I was reading some of the other bits and bobs you can get with this. Did you mention the loop module?
I did. Only briefly, I mentioned that you could get one.
That's really, really cool. As well as... So basically, you can add an effects loop at any point in the chain... to bring in one of your other pedals, and it's got a DC out, so you can power.
Oh, that's cool!
You can power that pedal with that through the Live Master itself. Very, very neat. Very, very cool little system.
I am worried.
I think the thing is that with the pedals being this price, this is a better way to go about this than something like the Nexi, which were a bit more money.
Nexi is an investment, I agree. Like, you're looking at 450 quid to get a proper sort of Nexi board and pedals, whereas this you can do for very, very affordably, which is nice. Although I do wonder if there might be some cease and desists going on in the near future on some of these modules. Like, if you look at the fonts and colours used for specifically their tremolo and flanger, there is a... They are very boss. I mean, that tremolo is literally the boss font and the boss green of the tremolo. And they've got a few others that are sort of following suit. There's one of their overdrives is very obviously a Tube Screamer.
I mean, you know, I think I should do the Mark Packham disclaimer here and say that the thoughts of Joe Branton do not necessarily represent Guitar Nerds Limited. And if anybody's going to sue anybody, they should sue Joe Branton personally as opposed to Guitar Nerds Limited.
Why
his address.
Not?
It's on the his address comes up on the screen now. If we were on TV,
Dan Grace.
Now this, just quickly on this Byang, for someone just starting to kind of get into playing guitar, or someone who's just wanting to start playing with a few effects or whatever, that'd be so perfect because you're not splashing too much money on it, but it looks like it worked pretty good.
Yeah.
Slightly better than my old Zoom back in the day.
Well, I agree. I think the effects...
Trumpet player stood on it and it snapped.
They were plastic.
They were
they?
Plastic, yeah.
That was the problem.
Much better being made out of metal now.
Do you know, a listener sent us a 505 recently, and I really wanted to do some videos on it, and I really wanted to try and make some really good sounds to sort of just... I wanted to make it sound really good.
What have you been smoking, Joe?
but yeah, it doesn't work. Unfortunately.
It doesn't work. Have you got right power supply and everything?
Oh, maybe it needs a different power supply. I don't know.
Honestly, what is this?
I was just using
podcast
a one
literally
spot.
Called Guitar Nerds. Like, you shouldn't need our wonderful guest here to be like, try a different power supply, mate. Like, literally the most bone idle question from any... You've been out of a guitar shop too long. That's what this is.
Yeah, Joe, probably. I'm into acoustics, and even I know about power supplies.
I'm sure it was the right power supply. Do you know what else we've got, which is really cool? We've got the Zoom 4040. A friend of the podcast has given me a Zoom 4040. Are you aware of what those are?
I'm not.
No. Okay, so the Zoom 4040 was a multi-effects in much the same way way as a maybe a Boss ME, maybe like the ME70 or something like that. So multiple switches and two expression pedals, one for volume and one for wah. Mid sort of 80s proper, you know, it, one of those pedals that's got like written down all the lists of sounds that you get, because there's no display screen. You just have to sort of look at what number is representative to what sound.
They look like what people thought the future would be like in the late 1980s.
When Tron was happening in the cinemas, yeah. It's an absolutely remarkable piece of kit, which is capable of some really super weird, kooky sounds, but... Yeah, well, and
is there a helicopter sound in it, like the old Yamaha keyboards, Casio keyboards?
Oh, I wonder. I'm sure there is.
There must be a way.
So Fender have announced their latest guitar in this sort of parallel universe series that they are flogging, as it were, since January, since Winter NAMM, when these all got announced. But for the first time, I'm actually quite excited about one of them. Whilst they were all announced, for some reason, we're talking about one every month for the rest of the year. But the new the Fender Troublemaker Telecaster is the new one.
Yeah, the latest edition. A real rebellious guitar. Cool-looking thing. So they are... a bound Tele, so Tele shape with a Tele Deluxe headstock. We've got an American Pro neck with a big headstock on it, like I say, with a 9.5-inch radius, two long-range style humbuckers, and stop-tail bridge. Coming in two different colours, ice blue metallic, definitely not Pelham blue.
Easy now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You're
all right. Yeah. Oh yeah. Sorry about that.
You got a bit of a cough.
Oh, a bit of a cough there. Sorry, mate. And an iced T-burst as well with a flame top. Real cool looking guitars. Obviously, kind of in the vein of the, you know,
of a strong competitor. Yeah, of the company.
I don't know what you're talking
Jay,
about.
Jay, we talked about this a little bit last week. We touched on it because the Reverb did an article on Tele Les Paul hybrids.
Yeah, I knew we'd talked about it. I couldn't remember where it was. Was that on? Did we do that on the Patreon?
I think it was.
I was trying to remember where we talked about it. I can't remember.
Potentially so, but yeah, it's a fantastic guitar, and what a wonderful blend of like two super cool guitars as well.
It's a nitro finish as well, so it's the kind of guitar that's going to age real nice.
Do you know if the other things in the Parallel Universe series have been nitro finished?
I think so. I think everything is,
because they are of that price point, aren't they? They are pretty top end. Which I thought was unusual. To be honest, when the Parallel Universe series got announced, I assumed we were talking about £700-£800 Mexican builds, because that seems like the obvious place to build these and the obvious price point to put such weird guitars out. This is like nothing in the Parallel Universe is ever going to be anyone's first guitar. It's always
no.
It's a collector's guitar. It's a guitar for someone who's looking for something a bit different, something a bit quirky. So I thought it was strange that they've put them so much towards the top end of their price point. But
I think that's the thing, is that these guitars aren't going to be somebody's first guitar. It's for someone who wants a whenever Fender bring out anything, there are two camps. If there's if it's something like for example, when the Players came out, when the Player series came out, the first thing everyone said was, well, why are you doing something like boring like this? This isn't exciting. This is boring. What are you doing? And so you bring out something interesting and different, like the Parallel Universe, and everyone says, well, this
weird.
Isn't a Tele. This isn't a Strat. So, you know, it's for people who are somewhere in the middle of those. That's the theory behind the series anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a fantastic looking guitar. The one that I'm really, really looking forward to is the Meteora.
The Meteora, I think that's going to...
No spoilers. We'll talk about that when it comes out.
I think that one's going to divide the podcast, the Meteora. Definitely.
Yeah, there'll be the people who are correct, who like me, who's got one on order, and then there'll be everyone else.
I haven't got one on order. Can I just borrow yours for a bit?
Yeah, of course. Fantastic.
Job done.
So Moore have added to their multi-effects range. It seems like we're talking about Moore every other week at the moment. It seems like that company just keep releasing effects pedals, whether it's... Well, what was it last week? They released a power amp head, like a rack mount amp
power
head.
Amp and cab.
And a cab, yeah. A vintage 30 single 12 cab to go with a couple of new preamps. Well, following that sort of line of pedals that... Well, it's not really that line of pedals that do everything, but they have been expanding their multi-effects range as well. Certainly the power amp went very well with their GE200, which is their version of the Helix, which I actually think sounds really good. If you can get around the controls being having fewer foot switches than a Helix, then I think the GE200 is a wonderful choice. But Moore have introduced the Black Truck, which is a revamp, as it were, of the Red Truck. So I wonder if they're discontinuing the Red Truck and replacing it with the Black Truck. The Black Truck is no longer actually shaped like a truck. There was like a truck graphic on the Red Truck, and this is...
I think that's a shame, but maybe it stops it looking like something from Toys R Us.
Well, yeah, there is sort of a truck shape on it. If you look at it, that it looks like the front bit is the window of the truck,
and the foot switches are the wheels.
So there's
one of those things where, like, if you had looked at, like, what you need to do is get a Red Truck and look at it really intently without closing your eyes for like a minute, and then close your eyes and then quickly look at the Black Truck. Sorry, I turned away from the mic. Then it will be there.
Yeah, exactly. So
do they do one made out of Lego?
It does. It looks pretty Lego-y. I'm actually really into this as a concept.
I think this is great. It's really, really cool. I think this is probably better than the Red Truck.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing about the good thing about this is multi-effects do work better when they've got rotary controls, because it's easier for anyone to use on the fly. Fly being the word, because this is very much in the same vein as the Tech 21 fly rigs. So what you get on the Black Truck is all on rotary controls. You get an overdrive, high gain, EQ, modulation, and space, as well as a tap tempo, which is also a hold for tuner button. The EQ is done on traditional fader-based sort of EQs. The high gain seems to be kind of just like an interesting sort of gated preamp, which is quite weird, like quite a weird thing to give its own foot switch to. Like I would have had a separate modulation foot switch, because of course the modulation foot switch has three rotaries, but then you're sweeping through all your between sort of a phaser, a tremolo, and a flanger. The overdrive doubles up as a compressor. You can add a compressor in as part of the overdrive, and the space obviously deals with both delay and reverb all on one switch, which again you could have separated out, I guess. But man, this is a great shove in the front of your gig bag. This will get you out of every wedding gig you'll ever do.
Yeah.
And I imagine it's more affordable than the Tech 21.
Well, and also, like the Red Truck, and like we've been saying, is the issue with the fly rig. This has got an effects loop. As does the Red Truck, of course, right, as well. So before the modulation and after your EQ, exactly the same design as the Red Truck. But I don't know if you've seen a picture of, I apologize for making this a podcast for Joe and Dan listeners, but I don't know if you've seen it. The lights on look absolutely incredible. So most of the lights are like a green LED, with LEDs around the circumference of the foot switch, and the tap tempo is a purple LED. It looks absolutely wicked.
Multicolored
LEDs. After
seeing those lights on, Joe is right. That's a true function band musician's
dream. Totally.
Because you can see it when things go totally wrong. You can lean down and turn the knob, and then you're back in the game again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think this looks great. And as I say, I'm not even going to say it. Like, Moore, keep doing great stuff. Good on them, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that does it for news. We're coming up to the end of the podcast, but I have really, really desperately wanted to use the questions jingle, which I'm going to use now.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Now.
For crying out loud.
There has to be a gap.
For crying out loud.
You can't just keep speaking until the
end. Oh, for crying out loud.
I'm just going to do it now. I'm just going to cut you off.
Questions.
So we should,
we could sample Jay saying "for crying out loud," and you could have that as a jingle. There you go.
We could well
keep it in house.
We're only going to get time to do probably a single question, so I am tempted to skip right through to one of the longer questions that we've had this week on the submitted to us unwittingly by our Facebook group, facebook.com/Facebook Forum, Facebook Forum, Guitar Nerds Forum. Damn it. I'm still getting the hang of this. Robin Smith has...
Long-time listener. First-time contributor.
Has asked people to copy and paste the list that he has provided into their reply and point out their favourite model from each company. And he's given us a list of guitar brands. So I thought between the three of us, we could discuss what our favourite model is from each of these brands. Now, the brands consist of Fender, Gibson, Gretsch, Ibanez, Charvel, Eastwood, Denelectro, Chapman, Reverend Jackson, ESP, Music Man and Schecter. Quite an eclectic taste, missing out some essentials and also including a couple of real oddballs. So it'd be interesting to sort of go through them and see if any of us can actually name anything in the ESP lineup. but yeah, starting with Fender, that's a big point of contention, because I would certainly have thought the quintessential Fender is the Stratocaster. Would you not agree that the Stratocaster has contributed more to rock and roll history than the Telecaster?
I think that you are looking in completely the wrong direction. And I would say if I was forced to pick one instrument from the Fender catalogue as my absolute favourite, it would probably be...
Don't say the Meteora.
The Precision Bass. Really? I think that the Precision Bass has contributed more to rock and roll music than any other instrument of all time.
I mean, it's definitely nothing has dominated. You think of the difference between sort of guitar and bass. Like Fender literally must have 95% of the market share of bass guitars between the jazz bass and the precision bass.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's probably not that high. I actually
don't know if the P bass has it anymore. I think I see more jazz basses live than I see P basses these days.
No, I think. Precision bass.
Are you playing punk bands? And I think punk's the last bastion of the P bass.
I think more generally, just in music, I think the precision bass is such a popular.
You play in math bands, which is people who are trying to be non-conformist.
No.
So they're going for the second most popular bass of all time.
No, it's not that. Honestly, math band bassists have the worst taste.
Yeah,
There's a lot of custom built six strings going on.
Yeah, of course it is.
Except there's a lot of tasteless stuff.
Six string acoustic fretless basses.
Like honestly, I am because at the moment I'm playing my 60s my lacquer. Do you remember the Mexican lacquer finish they did? Like
not live, you're not playing that. Are you?
Yeah, I am.
Sorry.
No.
Because you only use your.
My Stonefield's actually in the shop. It's getting fixed at the moment.
Oh yeah, okay, of course, yeah. That's a good get out there.
It's true. It has a floating wooden bridge, and it doesn't survive very well when I try and smash it through drum kits and stuff.
Okay, yeah,
so,
good. Okay.
Whereas the Lekka jazz bass does, and that's got like ashtray covers on it and strung with flats. No, it's not. It's Sunburst. Sunburst jazz bass strung with flats, but. You know, I'm an oddity in that, like the rest of the math band, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. But nonetheless, I think you see on like the pop and rock scene, you see more jazz basses than you do P basses these days.
I'm not sure I agree, actually, but, you know, we'll have to agree to disagree.
I still think the precision bass is the best bass guitar of all time. I just don't happen to play it. I have one. I have a very good one, but I don't play it.
I personally, if... I had to choose one guitar forever and ever, I would pick a Telecaster, obviously. But I completely agree with you, Jay. The instrument that's had the biggest impact, not just on guitars, on rock and roll music, but music full stop, is the precision bass.
I think so.
I think we do have to stick with guitars.
Okay,
for
fine.
For the sake of guitar nerds.
In that case, the Telecaster...
I do agree that I think
that's better.
I think the Telecaster is a better all-rounder. I will give you that.
Yeah.
But I think more important things have been done off the back of a Stratocaster.
Okay.
But
certainly more complex instrument. You know, there's more going on with the tremolo in there, stuff like that. It's got more inventions within it.
Yeah.
But the Telecaster, the purest form of the electric guitar.
Bloody best.
I agree.
If you bolted on neck with, you know, one pickup is all you need.
Of course.
And an ashtray bridge, it's just,
I agree. If you want something that literally does everything and will get you out of every situation, there will never be anything ever that will come close to the Telecaster.
Keith Richards, for example, any situation, he had to hit someone around the head with it, didn't he? At some stage.
So we're going for the Fender Telecaster Gibson.
The best, so hang on, what's the question here? Favourite model from that company, body shape, in that case, super easy, double cut.
You're going
double cut junior.
You think Les Paul Junior over an SG?
Double cut Les Paul
SG
over an SG.
SGs are so cool.
No, they're not. You're wrong.
Dan Grace.
I have a love for both. There, the SG Juniors are absolutely fantastic, but the perfect guitar is the Les Paul Junior
single
cut.
Single cut.
What are you talking about? Single cut.
Every day of the week.
The reason is
you're just being needlessly. You're being needlessly rant on here. That's what this
is. No, single cuts are cooler.
They're not cooler. Double cuts are much cooler.
Johnny Thunders. Need I say anymore? Plus, when you play an SG Junior, they tend to wobble about a bit. If you jump around on stage, you can get some cool effects out of bending the neck and stuff like that, but it's too much.
Only to the snaps.
Too much.
Yeah, Tim, the guitarist in my band, plays an SG Junior, and he's actually having the bridge relocated further down the body.
So it doesn't go out of tune so much.
Just so it doesn't. So he's not constantly, and I mean constantly, and he plays with 13s, so he's not constantly retuning halfway through a song.
So I would definitely go with Les Paul Junior double cut.
Fine.
1P90 TV white is a rather nice colour. One of the custom shot ones they did in the last few years.
Clearly a Sunburst single cut, but I will concede the double cut is also a very, very cool guitar. Gretsch, we're moving away from something so obvious. Also, I think anyone would be hard pushed to actually name the incredibly dull number based names that Gretsch tend to go for.
We're talking about, can name many of them.
Yes, you can name the Penguin or the Falcon.
No, I can name
Duo Jet.
Yeah.
6120 is the Country Gent, I think.
Oh, that's impressive. Well done.
5420 is the Electromatic version. 5422 if you want the double cut.
Sweet.
9126 I think is a Streamliner.
I think I only know
I really like serial numbers. Model numbers.
The 2220 is the short scale single cut bass.
Okay.
That's the only one I know.
Okay.
Do you know what? I realised the other day that I used to own a Gretsch guitar.
Yeah.
I played guitar in a punk band for a bit when I was like 17, 18.
Okay. Oh, the Flying Squirrels.
Four Dead Squirrels.
Four Dead Squirrels.
Yeah, yeah. But I totally forgot. I remembered the other day when I was thinking about it. I owned and I bought it because at the time Tom DeLonge was playing a single pickup.
ES-333.
No, he hadn't moved on to that yet, I don't think. I think he was still on his Strat, but I was obsessed with single bridge pickup guitars, and they were actually quite hard to get at the time.
Yeah.
And there was like an Electromatic single Gretsch pickup in the bridge. And it was like a bolt-on Gretsch, but like single Gretsch pickup in the bridge in black. And it was absolutely fantastic. It was the best guitar ever, and I have no idea what it was. I haven't been able to remember its name or find it since, but
well, there we go.
Classic guitar. I think it was less than 250 quid. Banging instrument. But anyway, what would you go for, Gretsch, if you've got to pick one?
See, you're saying that, I dare you to remember all the model numbers, but I don't need to remember all the model numbers because the best one is a Black Penguin.
So the Black Penguin, which, explain what the Black Penguin is. That's a larger, so it's a hollow body model, single cut. Is it a large jazz body version or was it smaller? It was one of the smaller ones.
Much smaller. Similar to kind of a Les Paul kind of size, really.
But
a little
hollow?
Bit bigger, with an armrest as well, and all of the bling. So gold hardware, the proper gold Falcon headstock decal on there as well.
But you've said it there. Why would we not say, if we're talking about the ultimate Gretsch, would we not say the White Falcon?
No.
Surely the White Falcon is again like the biggest contributor to sort of rock and roll.
Is that's not the point of this though, is it?
No, I guess not. It's sort of our favourite.
It's just Write your favourite model.
I guess so. But I would have just thought, sort of, as we're being a little more synonymous with our choices, I would have thought that the White Falcon, as it's offered so much, is kind of an obvious way to go.
Now, they're real cool. I've always preferred those newer double cut.
The shallow Falcons. Body White Falcons.
I think some people might consider that a bit sacrilege, but I just find them much easier to play and they're loads more fun.
Who was the dude? What was the name of the dude from the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Flea.
No, the other one.
John Frusciante.
Have you ever seen him trying to play a White Falcon? Because he has one that he used to switch. Because he had a telly and a Strat, a Sunburst telly, a Sunburst Strat, and a White Falcon.
He plays it in one of their really famous videos.
Yeah, he probably does. He looks like he's really struggling to actually get his hands around the instrument.
He looks like he's about 4 foot tall in that video. Yeah. For me, personally, they look awesome, White Falcons. They look absolutely fantastic. Personally, I'd have a Black Falcon. Because right. I think they're way cooler. But at the end of the day, I'm talking about something that would be really playable, something real easy, something that I would actually use.
Yeah, the Penguin's definitely modernised. It's fallen into sort of a modern player's feel a lot better.
Well, it's still a 50s model.
I just mean it's, you know, jazz box style guitars. You can't drive them. You know, you can't use them. You can't play them loudly, especially.
Feedback everywhere.
Exactly. So, yeah, certainly the Penguin does a better job of that. Gentlemen, we have actually way run out of time, so we're going to have to continue this list in the Patreon, where also we did want to talk about simple setups as well. Now, that we've had a ton of questions asked both on the Instagram and on the Facebook group, so I might try and get around to some of those questions, but it'd be great if we could talk about simple setups this week. We will also continue Robin Smith's question over in the Patreon itself, but yeah, that is it from us here on the regular guitar podcast. We will be continuing over in the Patreon episode, where for as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad free and early. $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour every week, plus access to bonus features, mini series such as Branch and Rant. And $10 a month makes you one of our executive backers, granting you access to everything already mentioned, plus the prestigious honour of having your name read out in one breath by me. Are we ready?
Yeah. Are you going to... we haven't got the name. You got the names?
I've got the names, mate.
I'm ready, okay. I'm ready now. Yeah. I'm ready now.
Okay. I just need some backing music.
Why don't you just put a jingle over it?
Okay, I will.
No, don't. Okay, I'll do something.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Do you want to do like a little jazzy beat and I'll...
Yeah, yeah, like absolutely. Okay.
Some trumpet over the top.
A one, a two, a one, two, three, four.
Scott Hamilton, Ivor John Mayer, Baron Peters, Golden Richard G. Richard III, John Arbo, Joshua Mitchell, Chris Wolfman, Cuthbert's son, Ryan McDowett, Robert Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Nate Nagel, Tucker Abaddon, Ernie Cooper, Emery James Baker, Christoph Lutzes, Ian Omar, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Derek Whitson, Martin Cliff, Matt Davis, Aaron Sherman, Blake Wyden, Jake Gray, Christopher Loset, Juan Correa, Scott Kennedy, Robert Smith, Rob Nordwick, Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Carlos Manta, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Mark Cross, Brad Page, A Short, Andy McKenzie, Laurie Anstead, Paul Corrigan, Will Kerr, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moo Gravett, Colin Anderson. That's right, if you didn't hear those first names again, there was Scott Hamilton, Ivorton Maycross, Mary Peters, Golden G. Richard III, Sean Howard, Joshua Mitchell, Chris Wilbur Jefferson, Ryan McDermott, Robert Cousins, Ron Crooney, James Hamilton.
Okay, that was nearly one and a half. Nearly one and a half there. That was.
You can tell that Dan hasn't listened to this anywhere near this far into the podcast for a while, because that was a surprise to you, wasn't it?
I was laughing quite a lot.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. You know where to go if you want to try and make me keel over by the end of the podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, or on YouTube at Guitar Nerds Videos. You can YouTube. Even visit our website, guitarnerds.net, where all our various channels are displayed in all of their glory. You can even purchase Guitar Nerds merchandise and become a true member of the club. That's it from us this week. We'll catch you next time for some more guitar nerdery. Thanks very much. Adios.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.